This is Johnny Blue Star. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. A lawyer now turned novelist, Kenneth Eady has freed himself sufficiently to focus on his main task, to create fiction that is both dramatic and powerful, but also dealing with issues that impact harsh American and global political realities. Our show focuses on The Involuntary Spy, the first book in Eady's espionage thriller series, and scientist Seth Rogen's efforts to expose a massive conspiracy to hide the truth of GMO's effect on the well-being of the people of planet Earth. Join us as we take a peek at this important suspense novelist's mind, as we unthread the deadly promise of GMOs in the real corrupt political and commercial economic system of today. Find out why Eady has his protagonist Seth Rogen risk his lucrative profession, his citizenship, and his life to expose the company hiding behind the distortions of media and corrupt government officials. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication. Welcome back to Threshold Radio. This is Johnny Blue Star. Before we begin, I'd like to say a few things about what we're doing here. Unlike a few programs that I follow fairly closely whenever possible, although we are personally interested in all kinds of phenomena, and we cover things like attacks on our constitutional rights, theories of manifestation, political cover-ups, the possibility of extraterrestrial contact, and other, shall we say, somewhat sensational topics, they are interesting, but only insofar as they serve our primary goal, to help awaken a sleeping planet. Many of these topics are actually relevant to that goal, because they deal with events and ideas largely ignored by major media, but have a fundamental connection to the human experience. They are often concerns that indicate what we need to do to retake our planet and create a foundation for true human rights, prosperity, and empowerment to the good people of this world. In my opinion, awakening is a state of consciousness, of an awareness that exists in everyone but is often ignored. I think this awareness, this spiritual awareness, is a foundation for any true resistance to the darkness around us. And without this power, true resistance to evil is largely downsized and usually impermanent. But equally important is the fact that there is no point in acquiring true awareness if one refuses to look carefully around one's world and to realize that what is sometimes promoted as good, tasty, and nurturing can truly be the opposite of what it pretends to be. True spiritual awareness doesn't look away from challenges. This is part of what spirituality is about. Matters of conscience. Matters of making things better. One of the shows I listen to and often admire counsels listeners that they are the resistance. Could be. Hopefully so. Certainly if people choose to resist. But what kind of resistance? And how are you aware? And are you aware of everything you need to do? How can you resist something that you don't even know exists or a danger that you have wrongly downsized in your mind? Mankind is texting while it is driving on a global scale and is going up a mountain pass with total focus on a computerized phone and forgetting to make the correct turns on a very slippery and dangerous road. There's only one destination with this obsession, and it is the bottom of the mountain. Today's guest has dared to tackle one of the fundamental problems facing every person in this audience, our daily bread. The food supply, the foundations of one of the fundamental things any type of living creature needs in one way or another, Both plants and animals need nutrients to survive, nutrients that can be poisoned, removed, or otherwise negatively influenced by human beings whose fundamental goal is to acquire money and power on a global scale. Novelist, nonfiction author, environmental activist, and attorney Kenneth Eadie is back on Threshold. In our first show, we focused on hive collapse disorder based on his nonfiction book, Bless the Bees, and the novel, The Patriots Act, which focused on the issues of illegal detention, torture, and other human rights issues highlighted by Guantanamo. Speaking of the Guantanamo, apparently the president has just signed a defense bill making it even harder for him to close this reprehensible cousin of Abu Ghraib that has done so much to harm the reputation of the United States. With that said, welcome to the show, Ken.
Thanks, Johnny. It's great to be back on Threshold.
Many years ago, I decided to write action-adventure books and films that had real-world political, ethical, and spiritual ramifications. Two of them are now up in Kindle, Boots in Manhattan and Thriceborn, which tackle questions respectively about war, government policy, and the foot soldier, and also the spiritual implications of the story of the fall treated from a science fiction perspective. My colleague, Kenneth Eadie, specializes in presenting issues of enormous political and ethical import, both in nonfiction, but also in two powerful novel series, the Brett Marks legal thrillers and the Involuntary Spy political thrillers. I consider this kind of novel, as well as the film genre, very important in awakening people to problems so effectively diffused and sidestepped by mainstream media. Storytelling, as well as other nonfiction books and alternative media, as represented by this and many other programs, addresses the spirit and emotions of people and is a very powerful way to affect change, which I believe in firmly. We very much support Ken's focused efforts and sacrifices to address many critical issues in the very tough work of a commercial publishing marketplace filled with distractions and relatively purposeless fiction. Today's focus is on the very serious issue of GMOs, so ably developed in Ken's novel, The Involuntary Spy, which, like his nonfiction books, Bless the Bees and Save the Monarch Butterfly, takes on the question of GMOs. Whereas the issue of destroying pollinators is critical to planetary survival, the ways GMOs affects humanity itself are profound and many-faceted. Good morning, Ken.
Morning, Johnny.
Okay, before we get into the guts of the novel and the issues of GMOs, we probably have quite a few listeners who have not met you before. So for this reason, tell us a bit how you evolved from a full-time attorney to a prolific author of nonfiction books and also novels. It would seem, speaking of novels, it's a tough task to break into this crowded work of sensational suspense, espionage, and political issues where so often ethical and true political concerns are obliterated by relatively prurient audience appeal. In other words, unexpurgated sex and violence. Why did you enter into this kind of a genre?
Well, I always wanted to do it, but I guess I was too busy working in my day job to just sit down and write. But being a storyteller, I think it's more important to have something to say rather than just write for entertainment. And I think that people learn more from a story than they do from just reading facts. Our brains are just wired to work in that way. So I sought to create something entertaining that could also expose an important political issue. And it's kind of what I call a combination of fiction and faction.
Well, you know, I think that nonfiction, I want to make a very broad generalization here. Nonfiction kind of increases our intellectual intelligence, the kind of thing that's measured by a Stanford Binet test. But novels and films, this type of thing, can increase our emotional intelligence. They can also diminish it drastically.
Yeah, they can. I choose to increase with mine.
I believe you do because, you know, I'm a supporter of what you do. And that's why I've chosen to talk to you today. But I wanted to focus on one book and one issue. The book I've chosen of yours is The Involuntary Spy, which is about a whistleblower scientist protagonist named Seth Rogen, who takes on a powerful oligarchic company called, in your novel, Germanat. His story not only highlights the problems of GMOs, but the critical issue of whistleblowers. Both he, a fictional character, and Edward Snowden wind up in Russia. But Rogan's situation is much more anonymous than Snowden's and compels him to directly take on his own covert operations, much more similar, much, uh, similar to real espionage activities because of the threat to his life every step of the way. Yet neither Snowden nor fictional Rogan are really spies, although both seemingly face consequences of what has been called the Espionage Act. Before we expand on the issue Rogan takes on, can we talk a little about the history of the Espionage Act and the fate of the contemporary whistleblower?
Sure. The Espionage Act is really an ancient bit of legislation enacted by Congress in 1917, shortly after the U.S. entered the First World War. And it was originally intended to prohibit interference with military operations and recruitment and to prevent the support of our enemies in wartime. But it's been used, as it seems, only to charge people for their political ideas. For example, newspaper editor Victor Borger, Socialist Party of America candidate Eugene V. Debs, Watchtower Bible and Tract Society President Joseph Franklin Rutherford, and more recently it's been used against whistleblowers like Daniel Ellsberg, Chelsea Manning, and Edward Snowden. So basically the government wields this act when it wants to keep something secret, and our objective of monitoring government is to make it more transparent so they don't break the law.
Well, it used to be that the Espionage Act, like you were talking about, was purely about espionage, you know, someone spying on behalf of another country. Now, somehow, by investigating serious governmental problems, that's a form of espionage? That seems rather problematical. What is the goal of intimidating whistleblowers not to come out, investigating the press with the promise of persecution if the government wants the name of sources and significantly accelerating the number of classified documents? Why are they doing this? And what are they protecting?
I think their goal is to keep things secret. If you keep things secret, nobody can complain about them, and you can basically do whatever you want. You can break the law, in other words. You can keep people locked up with no charges against them and no right to counsel and torture them as they did in the case of Guantanamo and CIA black sites around the world. You can spy on people whenever you want and break into their personal email or listen to their phone calls, as Edward Snowden exposed. A transparent government, like I mentioned before, is less likely to break the law. And a secret government can do whatever they want. I think it was Ronald Reagan that said that, you've got to keep an eye on the government. Ironically, what's happened has just been the opposite.
Well, I just remember that President Obama promised us that he was going to bring in the most transparent of governments that have been in the recent past. And I guess that just didn't come true. Besides whistleblowers like your character Seth Rogen in your book, are there other GMO whistleblowers, like, for instance, Dr. Thierry Vrain, who worked in the industry but changed his mind later?
Well, there have been, and the one that really peeved me was a guy that I used to have a lot of respect for. Bill Nye, the science guy?
I actually have. I've actually been in the same room with him at one point.
Well, he's basically an actor, but I thought he's done a lot of good things to educate children on science. But he originally was one of the first ones that came out against GMOs. And then last about 8 or 9 months, he just changed his mind after he met with Monsanto. I don't know what happened to make him change his mind, but I guess we all have reasons for the things we do and the positions we take. And we don't all sacrifice ourselves for our ideals like Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden. Something happened to change Bill's mind, and I hope it wasn't monetary.
Yeah, well, me too. But of course, I can't speak for what he did or his personal ethics, because I don't know him very well. But it is true that money seems to be speaking quite a bit to people who are in power, both in commerce and in politics. And that is really a shame.
It is.
In your novel, what did Rogan find that was so important that secreting that information could endanger his life?
Well, he learned that the food that the government's been allowing to be put on our tables for the past 20 years was not safe. and that the government actually is in collusion with private industry to keep that information from the people. And he also learned about plans to develop genetically engineered organisms for use in biological warfare. So once he was armed with that information, he really wasn't safe anymore and had to run to a neutral ground.
Ken, we're about to take a break. We're going to lead into a break with a clip from Patricia Welch's 3-CD collection called Dinner, Dessert, and Cocktails with Patricia. This song is called Orange Colored Sky, and let's listen to it.
Coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who is a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of the stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was 6. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditch the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in his stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070.
Patricia Welch's 3CD collection is called Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia. It contains 46 vintage songs by this powerful and versatile singer who I've worked with for years. I am still amazed when I listen to almost every song she has on this collection. You can find it at patriciawelch.com/CD. That's patriciawelch.com/CD. Now back to work. Hey, Ken, exactly how are GMOs created and how is altering plants this way produce fundamentally different results from breeding plants of the same species, say?
Well, people have been breeding plants and also breeding animals with the characteristics that they want to develop for many, many years. But GMOs are different because you're taking the genes of a completely different species, like a bacteria or another plant or even an animal gene, and you're splicing it with the genes of the crop that you want to have that particular characteristic. For example, one of the first GMOs was a tomato that was engineered so it wouldn't freeze. And they did that by inserting genes of a fish into the tomato.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm worried that someday you might pick up a tomato and it starts talking to you or something, you know?
Yeah, well, there's even weirder stuff they've experimented with, which was splicing human genes into pigs, but they came up with some really weird deformations, so that experimentation didn't go on.
What was the name of that novel? Jules Verne, The Island of Dr. Moriarty, was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, The House of Pain. Yeah, The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, Dr. Moreau. Okay, that's it. I made a mistake. Yeah. Well, anyway, that was a very disturbing sort of prophecy, I would say, to what's happening now.
Yeah.
What kind of consequences do we face for this kind of manipulation of nature, like introducing genetic material from such radically different creatures? Mm-hmm. How long is it going to take to learn of some of these long-standing consequences?
Well, the short answer is that scientists don't know how long it's going to take or how bad it's going to get. I mean, evolution has been thousands and millions of years to have things develop, you know, naturally over the process of natural selection. And now we've changed the game plan. Species don't combine traits with each other, genes with each other. They just don't. So we don't really know how long it's going to take to find out the consequences. They've been on our tables in America for about 20 years. And so what we're going to do is we're going to find out from that experiment. All the American people are the guinea pigs, and the results are being tallied right now. When you change life in this way, there's no telling what's going to happen down the road. There's entire sequences of DNA that they know nothing about, and they're considered extra or useless material, but they've got to be there for a reason, and we'll find out.
Well, I guess we will. I want to say, Ken, that I love your book. I love the way that it integrates some of these really important questions with with other things, you know, with adventure and exciting events, but still there's a kind of perfect relationship between the non-fictional references and the reality that this man is facing in a fictional novel. I like this passage that you wrote. says this is from a fictional interview of your character Seth by Russian Today. It says, "Did you ever see the movie The Fly?" Yes. In The Fly, when the scientist tested his teleporter by using himself as the test subject, his genes were spliced with the genes of a fly that was in the teleporter with him, and all kinds of unexpected things began happening to his body, and he eventually turned into a monster. When we splice a gene from an animal or a bacteria into the gene of a plant, we don't really know everything that will happen. Evolution, like you said before, has had millions of years to work with the present species that we know on Earth. Because of the genetic engineering process, which is very new at this moment, the GMO plant we make today could produce toxins or even viruses that we've never seen before. We may never be able to control them. The government says that if the genetically engineered food looks like conventional food, then it is safe. Safe. I don't get that. Ken, how can they? This is true, right? They actually don't force us to test these foods. They just ignore that. Is that right?
No, that's right. They don't require independent testing of foods. They don't require FDA testing of foods. They let the industry submit their own test results. And this is courtesy of Michael Taylor, who's had high positions in the FDA and also Monsanto for the past 20 years. And he's developed the rule that the government uses now, and that's if it's generally recognized as safe, or GRAS. If it looks like an ear of corn, it tastes like an ear of corn, it's an ear of corn, no matter what it's got inside of it. And that's how they do it.
Well, a lot of the pharmaceutical products also, aren't they basically being tested by the pharmaceutical companies? In ways that sort of resemble this type of process,
they are, but they go through a stricter process and trials and things like that. But with GMO foods, they can basically pass anything they want. There's no criteria to go through. There's no hoops to jump through. Hardly any.
How do intelligent people, and I think that a lot of people in this government that we have are, I guess you call it intellectual intelligence. Why do they have the nerve to take such a superficial perspective on such highly technical things as manipulating genetic material? How can they do it, Ken?
Well, you got to remember, Johnny, the government serves the people who control it, and that's supposed to be us, the voters. But your local congressman, your senator, and even the president answer to industry that's contributed to their PACs and their super PACs. They're all bought and paid for. That's why the FDA is run by ex-employees from Monsanto and their attorneys. And other industries are run in the same manner in our government. We've lost control of it at the local level.
Well, let's go back to your novel. How do you, and its comparison to reality, how do you look at Seth Rogen? Why is he risking so much? Why would whistleblowers take the risks they do, like Edward Snowden again, for instance, who certainly exposed these secret documents with eyes open to the consequences, including his possible imprisonment and even death? Why would people like this take such big risks?
I think they reach a point in their life where they look at what they're doing, and they have a crisis over what they're doing to serve their own needs and what they should be doing for the public good. If they're in that kind of position, for example, Seth had a moral crisis. He was a scientist who originally tried to get into this field of genetic modification of food to try to feed the world. That's what the industry claims it's trying to do. And he realized, during the time that he was working for Germanat, that's not what was happening. And he decided to leave behind his cushy job that was highly paid because it wasn't worth contributing to the poisoning of society. And he took a risk. I think that's why they do it.
Yeah. I would say that people like that, I tend to think that's sort of the core aspect of patriotism, which is to defend the ideals of our country against all its enemies. So it's unfortunate that we have to
be vigilant. You look at someone like Edward Snowden or Chelsea Manning, and they're being called traitors.
Yeah, it's what is that in 1984, doublespeak?
Yeah.
Well, you say the opposite, and the opposite is what you want them to believe. You just, yeah, right in their face, you say, it doesn't matter about manipulating genetic material. Let's just go do it. After all, that's a very nice, you know, nice red tomato or red apple, even though it might have wax on it and some other chemicals to decorate its coloring. Anyway, we're going to take a break now, and then I'm going to ask you some questions about a little bit about your relationship of your own experience to the novels and how that feeds into it. Right now, we're going to play a little advertisement for my friend Edgar Ahrens, who is one of the most magnificent composers I have ever heard in the field of film and TV. I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects like book covers, logos, web design elements with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theaters, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com. For artist illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
We're back with author Kenneth Eady. And Ken, you know, one of the interesting things about this novel is that ultimately the character finds safe haven in Russia, which of course makes him somewhat parallel to Snowden. Yet the truth is that unlike a lot of authors who write about fictional places and so forth, that they've never visited, Russia is a place you personally know quite well. Tell us a little about how you came about to go there and what it's like now. I'm sure that a novelist is treated a bit differently than a refugee like Seth Rogen. Tell us about your relationship with this country that's so often in the news today. I think it's a really interesting thing that, you know, that some of the things that Putin does is so, well, it's very, it's kind of fascinating. And, It's hard to exactly tell what's going on, but look at this fact that we see things like a broadcasting company in the U.S. like RT with people like Tom Hartman or Larry King as talk show hosts. On the other hand, we see all this stuff going on, them bombing Syria or sending missile sites to be sent near Turkey because a plane shot down. It's a very confusing sort of environment, but still there's something there that's really interesting now.
Well, I've had a long relationship with Russia. It's kind of like my second home because my wife is Russian and we spend a lot of time here. I'm actually calling you from Russia right now. So I know a lot about the country and there's a lot of similarities of the Russian people to American people, believe it or not. And I guess there's a lot of differences, but since I've been involved with Russia so long, I've probably lost track of all those differences. But yeah. It's a really interesting country. People are very well read here and very well educated. So being a novelist, I'm pretty well received. I'm kind of a celebrity here, which is nice. And I like Putin. I mean, not all the Russians like him, but I remember when he was the premier of Yeltsin, when everything was all messed up in Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union, and he was the premier for Yeltsin. I saw him on his first public announcement. I said, that guy is going to be the next president of Russia. And sure enough, he was. And I think that I think we're lucky that he's actually in control, because if it would have been someone like George W. Bush, who had his finger on the nuclear button when that Turkish plane shot down the Russian plane, I'm not sure if we'd be in a very safe position.
Yeah, there's things that are going on. I mean, like giving some refuge to whistleblowers, particularly Snowden, is amazing. Mm-hmm. And joining, let's put it this way, independently at this point, perhaps it'll change, taking initiative to counteract ISIS, I think is an amazingly important thing. And I know that Russia's interests are involved, but it's actually the world's interests. So I'm glad that he's doing that. I think there's an intelligence there that we seem to be lacking sometimes in our foreign policies, especially towards a clear threat.
The basic thing is they were invited to come by the government of Syria. That's something that the states didn't think about when they went in their bombing campaign in Syria. They thought, all right, here's another place where we can effect a regime change, and they had no exit plan. They just thought, we'll just wreak havoc and blow the whole place up like they did with Iraq, and then what you've got is opportunity for groups like ISIS to come to life, which is what the Iraq war caused, the opportunity for ISIS to get a stronghold. That opportunity wouldn't have been there without the Iraq war. So I think that if you have a strategy and you're representing a known government, that it's probably a better game plan than just going in haphazard and hacking everything up.
And just to mention this as an aside, although it's actually a fairly big deal, there are these drone strikes that are causing, regardless if the governments allow them in or not, they cause so much damage to civilians that it's almost frightening to imagine that we can just go into a country, and again, sometimes without any permission, sometimes with permission of a certain group in government, but we can just wreak havoc. We are just getting entangled, as Washington warned us against, in all kinds of things, and not for the right reasons, I'm afraid.
I agree. Well, it's crazy.
Here's another passage from your book. When Seth is asked about GMO's possible use in biological warfare, he says, no, it isn't used that way, but it is used in the war on drugs to kill the opium poppy and cocoa plant farms. When questioned, isn't that a good thing? He says, and this is an amazing little passage, it will also kill beneficial plants and wildlife and infect the rainforest where a lot of these drugs are grown. Colombia, for example, is not only known for growing these drugs, but is also the home of rainforests that are called the lungs of the earth, because they produce up to 20% of the world's oxygen for our atmosphere. This could have devastating consequences for life on Earth as we know it. Is this true? Is this real?
It's true that they've experimented with engineering organisms to wipe out the opium poppy and the war on drugs and cocaine. But as far as I know, they never have implemented it. Not yet. So it's true, but the repercussions of such an act, if they decide to do it, are exactly accurate as recited in the book. And if it suits their needs, I think they will do it someday.
Yeah, governments tend to experiment with all kinds of things that perhaps, unleash the biological warfare genie. And who knows how much of this has actually been responsible for a lot of some of the medical havoc that we have. I also, to change the subject a bit, I notice a great deal of very specific descriptive writing in your book. For instance, there's a martial arts training when Yuri, Seth's Russian handler, teaches him how to defend himself. The methodology of using special software to hack his boss's computer and the spyware he installs it. The description of a Russian nightclub and its guests. The description of education in Russian high school. Even more so, there's a lot of research and scientific descriptions, often flavoring conversation that deals with GMOs. How much of this, as we just were speaking about, in general, how much of this is accurate and how much research do you have to do to create these political and legal thrillers?
It's 100% accurate. In the case of an involuntary spy, I had to do a lot of research on GMOs. So all that research is in the book and it's all accurate. But on the other things that you mentioned, I like my books to be real. I like, for example, when a character disarms another character with a gun or a knife, I go in and study on the internet how that's supposed to be done and how to describe the physical action so that it sounds real to my readers. So not only do I want to be accurate when I'm talking about an issue like GMO, but I want to be accurate right down to the software hacking and all the other stuff. I want it to really be real.
Well, I understand that. As a matter of fact, sometimes, you make a sort of transformation in different kinds of fiction. Like when I was writing a science fiction thriller, The Thrice Born, it was dealing with angels, and I wanted to know how angels would fight. So I went to a friend of mine, Robert Zalo, who I work with sometimes as an artist, who developed the martial arts system, and we kind of brainstormed how they would actually fight that it would look real. So,
Wow.
Anyway, I think that you are concerned as a novelist to create a reality, and in your genre, it's got to be actually accurate to give the most effect. Now, you say later on, I believe this from your appendix. It was no secret that genetically engineered foods were controversial, so controversial that his company and the other big chemical companies spent millions of dollars on PR campaigns to convince the public that GMOs were the promise to end world hunger and malnutrition. And they would spend millions more to fight labeling to prevent Americans from knowing what they were eating, while their cronies at the USDA and the FDA silently allowed genetically engineered foods to occupy up to 70% of the American table. Europe had already had its coming out when the only independent researcher was able to finally talk to the public about this finding on GMOs. I guess that's from the book itself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the novel. Yes.
Yeah.
How accurate is it? I mean, how much of effort has gone into making this wish to prevent Americans from contesting or to be able to contest the government's lax food policies?
Oh, it's 100% accurate. There's been the industry, millions of the junk food industry and spending to try to prevent labeling. In fact, they've sponsored their own bill in Congress called the DARK Act to try to have the feds take over state labeling so the states can't force the companies to label their foods. So they just don't want us to know what we're eating. And like I said before, they use the generally recognized as safe standard. And so we're getting corn that has its own insecticides that explode the insides of insect stomachs. Or we're getting corn that's been soaked with levels of glyphosate that they never allowed before, that the EPA has increased, so because the EPA is also bought by Monsanto. So it's 100% accurate. They spent millions on a PR campaign to tell us how they're going to feed the world when it's not true, and they spend millions of trying to prevent labeling.
Give us some idea from a biochemical standpoint of what's being done to alter food and the resulting negative effect on the human body through genetic engineering. I'm sort of asking about the dark side of the process.
Well, despite the rhetoric of we want to feed the world and we want to feed the hungry, which is really a social political problem, most GMO foods are engineered to survive pesticides. So you can spray a whole farm with their pesticide and kill everything but the crop. And the other ones are engineered to make their own pesticides. As a result, you either get a dangerous bacteria in the case of BT engineered foods that make their own pesticides, or you get a crop that's been doused in glyphosate, which is a pesticide that the World Health Organization says is cancer causing. So this is the main thrust of the two most common kinds of GMOs, and the negative effect is we're getting doused with an extra amount of cancer-causing pesticides that are sprayed on the food and take up in the tissues, or we're getting foods that have bacteria inside of them that have been proven in studies to breach the digestive system in humans. And they're also causing cancer.
Wow. Listen, we're going to go to a break now. Here's a clip from Patty Greer, a wonderful singer-songwriter who became one of the leading experts on crop circles. Seems appropriate. Patty is now focused on continuing her amazing career as a chronicler of this perplexing and wondrous phenomena. You can see clips of her films and soundtracks at pattygreer.net. That's pattygreer.net. Check out her songs on YouTube. Here's one of them. It's called Are You the One?
Take me deep into your heart. Show me.
following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here, there's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
This is Johnny Blue Star. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
We're going to go to a break in a few minutes. Just wanted to ask you, Ken, we're going to come back, of course, and discuss in more detail your novel and the reality of GMOs. But just in a short answer, what can we do? What can people actually do to make this happen? I don't mean just in a sort of personal way, but in a way that would actually have some kind of power.
Well, you, like anything else, you exercise the power of your pocketbook. You don't buy junk food. Don't buy anything in a box, bottle, or can. Buy only organic. It's going to cost you a little bit more in the short run, but it's going to save you a lot of medical problems in the long run. So if you eat organic, if you grow your own, if you've got a garden that you can actually grow some food in, or if you support your local farmers and eat healthier, then we're going to change things, and we're going to lessen our dependence on GMO foods. They're mainly used as animal feed and in junk foods. They're in almost all junk foods. Corn syrup is all GMOs, and basically anything you get in a box, bottle, or can, you got to be careful.
You know, what strikes me is that we always talk about, you know, like writing our congressperson and voting, which hasn't really worked very well since people aren't voting in primaries. And because there are, when you write a letter to your congressman alone, you're largely ignored. But there's also the possibility of making your vote in this direction through, like you say, what you buy. But yes. I think that it will take a rather powerful consciousness on the part of many, many people to not only buy these things because of their own health needs, but also as a way of demonstrating that this is what they want to buy. They don't want to buy this other stuff. Do you think
exactly.
there's enough
and
people
it all
to
comes
make an
with
impact
being informed.
Now?
I mean, people, most of the people don't know what they're eating. That's the problem. If they knew what they were eating and they knew why their dad had diabetes or their mom is diagnosed with cancer, then it's going to make a difference to them. They're not going to eat that crap anymore.
Well, we're going to go to a break now, and we'll be right back with Kennedy and a discussion of his extremely interesting novel, The Involuntary Spy.